Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is the iOS Show, episode 259, recorded on June 20th, 2015. Enjoy! All right, it's time for the iOS Show, where we cover all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me, as always, is Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey, Adam, how are you doing?
Good, except I'm not really with you this time.
Yeah, well, that was kind of a one-time thing.
Yeah, in studio slow.
Yeah.
It was fun.
It was. I'm actually not even there myself. I'm down in Altadena.
La La Land. Get some good milk.
Is there good milk
and
here?
Ice cream.
Oh, yeah, Altadena. Yeah, you told me about
Altadena
that.
Altadena Dairy. Dude, that stuff's yum.
According to you, I guess. I don't know. I've never heard, so. But it is what it is. Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer is also here. Hey, Jeff, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, and I'm not in La La Land.
And you're probably better off for it.
He's right. In Co.
Yeah, I'm in Co.
Co.
I'm in Boco.
Boco. Yeah. It's a good place to be.
I'll be there soon.
Yes, you will.
Oh, yeah, because there's the Mac Observer gathering of...
TMO camp.
Gathering of minds.
I'm already scoping out the beer.
Oh, yeah.
I have to figure out how I'm going to get myself over to Great Divide in Denver at
cars.
Some point.
I hear cars work for that.
You know, if you were getting in earlier, I would just drive straight there.
Yep.
Okay, well, I'll let you guys plan this stuff out after the show, because I'm sure they didn't come for that. Of course, our sponsor this week is Lynda at lynda.com/TIOSS. It's the best place to learn just about anything online. So go check them out, and we'll talk about them more in the show. And the first thing is iOS 9. iOS 9 seems to have support for an iPad Pro-sized keyboard. Did you guys see this? It looks pretty nice. I haven't seen... There's a comparison shot between the current iPad and the iPad Pro, quote-unquote, keyboard, I believe. Or maybe I'm misreading this. I think I am actually mislooking at this. Okay, so it looks kind of like a... It looks like a real keyboard in that it has an elongated backspace key. It has a lot more stuff there available to you by default. Although it's interesting, they decided along the top, instead of providing numbers, they provided symbols by default. And if you want to get to numbers, you have to actually hit the little numbers switcheroo key.
I wonder if they found that people need those symbols more frequently than numbers.
I would think that they do. I do, I think.
Yeah, I suppose so.
In age. I don't know. It might be because I type a lot in Markdown when I'm taking notes and stuff, especially on my iOS devices.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I'm always needing the symbols.
That makes sense.
Yeah, which I mean, I use a Markdown editor typically, and so that they put those keys up there, but even like if I'm in notes or something like that, I have now in the habit of anytime I type text, I'm typing in Markdown.
Interesting.
Into any kind of text editor.
Yeah. Well, I haven't had a chance to play with this keyboard, but I guess it's on my iPad. I could play with it right now if I wanted to. I'm just excited about the whole multi-touch trackpad-y sort of mode.
Yeah,
that they had built.
Yeah, I want to try that.
Cool. You know what I heard, though, about the keyboard that is a little bit disappointing, especially on the iPhone, is that they've now disabled by default the little thing that when you tap the key, you know, it pops up so you can actually see the key that you were tapping. That's turned off by default in iOS 9. I just read
that's
today.
That's weird. I wonder why.
Oh,
luckily,
yeah, because it doesn't
switch and you can toggle it back on.
It doesn't do that on the iPad, of course, but it, yeah, that's standard behavior for the iPhone.
Yeah, it's because your finger covers the key.
Right.
So you pop out and see actually what you pressed.
Well, but at least they left an option in there.
Yeah, but I guess it's off by default, at least current in the current builds.
It doesn't seem
to. Hopefully that'll change by the time iOS 9 officially ships.
Yeah, perhaps they're doing. I'm sure they have some code in there that lets Apple know how people are using it.
Yes, yeah, so I mean, I don't like A/B testing.
I was trying to determine if it mattered to me or not, but you know, I'm not a touch typist, so I can't. I have to like see what I'm typing. So, but I'm curious now how much I pay attention to that. I think I really don't anymore because I learned the Zen force. You know, use the force typing method.
Oh, especially yeah, on the iPhone. Totally. You just kind of you give it an idea of what you want to do,
and I let the autocorrect do its thing. So. Yeah. Maybe it's not that important anymore now that we have autocorrect and the what do they call the typing suggestions?
The predictive text or whatever.
That's not what it's called. Apple has a name for it, right?
Yeah.
The quick type.
Yeah, quick type.
Right. I like to think of it as random predictions.
Yeah, random predictions by Apple.
The keyboard stuff is the stuff I'm most excited about in iOS 9, to be honest. I think that and maybe I don't even think the notes stuff. A lot of people seem to be very excited about the new notes.
Yeah, I still think the notes stuff is going to be pretty interesting.
I use other note taking apps, so I don't really use the built-in app, and I don't know that there's enough in there to force me over to it.
Well, there's enough to force me over.
I have not yet seen a note taking solution for the iPad that seems to truly capture what one would need to do. A legal pad sort of does a better job still to this day, I think. Or
are you
notebook.
Talking about handwritten notes or typed notes? Or
well, I mean, ultimately, I would prefer to have as much typed note as I could possibly get. But depending on what you're doing, you may need to do a sketch, you may need to do some drawings, or there may be complex math symbols you need to type, for school. There are a lot of things that I gave up completely taking notes on my machine, but I do have notes from other classes where I was able to slog through it and make those notes, and I am still able to refer to those much more quickly than I can with any of my handwritten notes, no matter what sort of little system I devised for myself to try and allow myself to get back to those notes. And I know that there are people who use Notability. Notability is pretty common, I've seen in school for anybody.
I do like Notability a lot.
An iPad, yeah. And perhaps I need to give it another try. I think maybe the biggest thing is I need to get a good stylus, which Jeff is hoarding and still won't give me any.
Well, do you need a stylus?
Once you're a good boy.
I need a stylus. Yeah. Send me a stylus.
I can't find my box.
I got a gazillion of them. What kind do you need?
It's one that would be good for doing handwritten notes.
I think for me, that's the Jot.
Is it the one with the little disc at the end?
Yep. I don't know how you feel, Jeff, but I like it because I can see all the way down to the point.
Yeah, because I need to do like precision, like drawing up physics diagrams and stuff like that.
All right, so for old school style, which would be the disc, the Jot, but for the newer style, where it's actually like a pen tip, it's the Adonit
script.
Evernote script.
Yeah, I have one of those too.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what's the best note-taking app these days? Is it Notability? Because, I mean, it's something like I would prefer to combine text with drawing and occasional photos. Would that be Notability?
Notability is still my favorite.
Yeah, it seems like that's what people use. And I've seen a lot of people's Notability notes, and they have all of those things combined, and audio as well. And actually, now that I think about it, Notability has that neat feature where if you start recording, so you do your recording of audio, and as you go, it indexes what you do as far as typing or writing to the audio.
Yes.
And so it does it highlight it, or as it goes, does it highlight your notes and stuff like that, or something? I'm not entirely clear on it.
I'm not clear on that either, but I know it does that because I've looked at all the features. I'm like, okay, if I was in a class, this would be really handy.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to wonder how. I mean, it seems like Apple's kind of going in that direction with the Notes app. Yeah, so far I don't really... It's tough for me to get into using Notes still. I really wish there was just a text edit on iOS.
Well, I mean, so for typed notes, again, you know, my solution has been to use Markdown and Byword and sync it all with Dropbox.
I mean, and I use IA Writer.
Yeah.
Because it does the real-time iCloud syncing. So it doesn't matter if I'm on my Mac, my iPhone, or my iPad.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. That was a fun tangent. Anyway, back to the iPad stuff. So we're looking at, it looks like via Stephen Trodden Smith. Is it Trofton or Trotten? I never get it right.
I never know.
Yeah, let's go with
let's split the difference and go with Trouton.
Stephen Trouton Smith suggests that... The 12.9 inch iPad Pro, based on the keyboards that we saw, I believe he was the one who also brought those to light, because he's always tweaking those iOS builds. 2732 by 2048 pixels on the iPad Pro, same pixel density, 264 ppi, which is I believe the same as the current Retina display, which makes total sense. You probably don't want to mess with those pixel densities. And, you know, of course, Apple is continuing to push auto layout with as many apps as you can. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Dave Hamilton said that any app that is auto layout, that is built with standard UI, UI kit stuff and is done with auto layout will work out of the box with the split view stuff.
Believe so. I think
yes, that
sounds
what
Apple alluded to. I don't know if it's that easy, like it just automatically works, or if there's a little bit of finagling you need to do. It sounded like there was a little bit of finagling that you needed to do. I don't know if that's as simple as checking a checkbox when you compile.
I bet it probably is. If it's something where you've gone through the steps of only using UIKit stuff and doing the auto layout, you probably just need to check the box that says, hey, I'm cool.
It was the Gruber. Did you watch the Gruber interview with Phil Schiller?
No, I didn't.
So there's a funny moment in there where they're talking about that, and Gruber points out that, you know, when they announced the slide over features and the split screen stuff on iOS 9, he said the reaction was interesting in the audience because you could tell which developers sort of followed the rules, because it was like, yay! Like if you had done the auto layout UI kit thing that Apple was recommending,
yeah, you just
and then
yourself
he's like,
on
everybody
the
else was like, oh,
I don't know why. At this point in the game, how could you not? It was pretty clear even leading up to the iPhone.
Oh, Apple made it very clear.
Yeah, that was the point. But he said it was just funny to hear be there in the audience and see the reaction, because you could immediately tell which developers were using auto layout and UI kit and which ones weren't. It was like.
Yep.
I'm screwed. I have to go rewrite everything. I mean, there are certain apps that just won't work like that. I mean, games is a very good example of, you know, you're not going to have split screen games because they just can't use those.
Yeah.
Generally can't use those features.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Right. Also, although someone's going to want to do split screen games so they can play a game and pretend like they're working on business at the same
time.
But
you just, I mean, I in my iOS developer group, this has come up before. I mean, everything in almost every game you have is all custom UI controls. I mean,
it has to be. I mean, unless you're using, I wonder what provisions are there for the SpriteKit stuff that Apple's.
Well,
got.
The thing is, and that only works if you're using an iOS game. The reality is most game developers are using something like Unity or something, so they can do cross-platform and
right. And that's smart. They should be able to do that.
And they still can. It's just you're not going to see a lot of games in slide over or split screen.
Yeah, I don't think games lend themselves very well to that sort of thing anyway.
Well, maybe I want to play Tetris and take notes at the same time.
That's going to be hard. What? First of all, are you taking notes on like your Tetris moves, or what are you doing when you're doing both
no,
of those things?
You know, you're in
doesn't
that meeting.
Everyone.
It's just, you know, a lot of people in Congress.
Oh, gosh.
Need these speakers.
A lot of people everywhere. Anywhere someone has a job that they should be doing and they have access to a machine that will display a game, there are games happening. Take my word for it. It's everywhere.
And I think it is Trotten.
Trouton.
It's T-R-O-U-G-H-T-O-N.
I think that's how my computer pronounced his name. Let me see. Let's see here. Trofton. Oh, Trofton. That's what Alex says.
Alex is wrong.
He needs to send a memo. I heard a story that Andy Anatko was working with some buddies at Apple, and they when they were doing the voice stuff, they made sure that his name was pronounced correctly in the OS.
And rightly so.
It should be, yeah.
Anatko?
Yeah, Anatko.
Is it?
I don't know. I think so. I'm sure I tested that. I heard that maybe 5 years ago. So I think it's in there. That's pretty cool. When you get those connections at Apple, you can dictate certain things. We have the Apple Watch to talk about, some security stuff, and the iPhone. Before we get to that, though, we're going to talk about Lynda at lynda.com/TIOSS. They're for problem solvers, the curious, for people who want to make things happen. Maybe you want to master Excel or learn negotiation tactics, build a website, boost your Photoshop skills. You can go to lynda.com and feed your curious mind. I like to say that it's like YouTube, but you're guaranteed to learn something valuable every single time you go and hang out at lynda.com. If you use lynda.com/TIOSS, you'll get a free 10-day trial, which gives you unlimited access to every single course on lynda.com. You can view tutorials on your iPhone, your iPad, tablets, Android devices, all that stuff on the web. And you get access to any new courses that they add within that 10-day trial. And of course, when you join up, you get the same perks. It's not like some of those other places where you have to pay per course. You can see everything. You can just go nuts. If you wake up tomorrow and you decide, hey, I want to be a web developer, and I want to be maybe like an Angular or a, you know, any other JavaScript, like high level JavaScript framework developer, but you don't even know HTML, you can go crazy. They've got HTML courses, CSS, JavaScript, and those higher level frameworks. You can also learn Swift. They have the iOS SDK, Objective-C. If you don't know anything about that sort of stuff, you can build up, again, Objective-C, iOS SDK, and then Swift Essential Training. You can also learn like actual design skills. I'm not talking about Photoshop. I'm talking about design principles, which is very cool. You get the same sort of thing for video stuff, business skills, such as they have stuff like doing income taxes and other sorts of business skills, going paperless. You can learn software skills. If you want to learn how to use any of those Adobe Suite applications, they've got them all there for you. You're going to be an expert after you're finished with those. I think that's probably how I learned how to use Photoshop. And the great thing about...
They have the updates for the new 2015 versions that just came out too, I just noticed. Oh, so they've cool. already updated for...
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, and the
Creative Cloud 2015.
The best thing about all the stuff at Lynda is it's heavily indexed, and all the videos are bite-sized, so you can get in there and find exactly what's new. So maybe you know the Photoshop stuff, but you want to get the updates on exactly what's new. You can pop in there, find what's new. They have transcripts that actually follow along magically, so you can click right in the spot where you want and go back. And they have one of the most important things about watching any tutorial video for me is variable speed, and Lynda has that, so you can slow it down if you want, you can speed it up. You know, sometimes you're watching the first half of the video is something you kind of already know the concept of, and so you want to speed up the video so that you can listen to it but you don't miss anything if it rolls by and hey, I don't know that. So you get the faster speed, you can slow it down, whatever. It's I mean, they've really thought through the entire experience at Lynda. So check them out, lynda.com/TIOSS. You'll get a free 10-day trial of everything they have there. And you know what? Send us a tweet letting us know what your favorite courses are, what you're working on right now with Lynda. I'd love to know. So just you can send it to at Michael Johnston and, you know, CC at Lynda as well. And
dude.
Because I'm sure they would love to hear about it.
They just added a course on said essential training.
What is that?
You know, Gawk and said, it's a Unix command. I've never learned how to use it for parsing and transforming data.
Oh, cool.
In Unix.
Yeah, they've got all that stuff. If you've ever wanted to
get my
know,
Unix,
like,
my terminal foo going, I've never grokked said.
They so have all that terminal foo stuff.
Yeah.
You can get totally proficient with the terminal.
There's a great course called Unix for Mac OS X users. If you haven't done any,
I gotta watch Unix. That.
Yeah,
I could go outside this weekend, but I could also watch that.
That's right. Just the thing is, like, once you have it, it's like you jump in there and, you know,
it's so nice.
You'll find something that you want to, like, you're like, oh, I want to check that out. What's great is I just add this stuff to my, you can set up like a watch list, a playlist, and just add stuff to it.
Exactly. Yeah.
So cool. All right. We love Lynda.
Yeah. Yeah. They're great.
They're awesome.
All right. So moving on to Apple Watch stuff. Yeah, let's see here. Oh, this is pretty fun. So I guess, so watchOS 2, developers can make their native applications for it, but there aren't as many frameworks and APIs available to developers of the Apple Watch as there are for iOS, such as, I think it's like SpriteKit, and there are certain UI views that aren't available, UIKit. However, there are developers who have successfully hacked games like Cannibalt and Flappy Bird to the Apple Watch. And there's a pretty fun video of, they call it Nano Cannibalt because it seems like all the watch stuff is prefixed with nano. And you can play Cannibalt on your watch.
Wait, why is it prefixed with nano? In the frameworks, you mean? Like in Xcode?
Yeah, it seems, okay. If you explore the file tree, I haven't done too much, but I know that if you look at some of the data involved, yeah, it's they prefix with nano.
Okay, that's funny. I don't know, gaming on the watch.
Well, I don't think it's
I had a Pac-Man watch in the 80s.
Yeah,
I did. It was a little LCD watch. I mean, it was one of those where, you know, it's like got the predefined little areas that just sort of light up.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, but I remember those.
It even had a little plastic joystick that you would plug into this little hole at the bottom.
Yeah, I remember those. Those are cool.
And the joysticks, the little joysticks, there were different colored ones, and they clipped kind of to the side of the band.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess.
So you had like a little joystick bandolier on your wrist.
Exactly.
That's fun.
Those were good times.
Yeah.
So I guess we had Tamagotchis and all that stuff, right?
Right. So. Yeah. Well, okay. So that's one of these things. So 9to5 Mac is, they say that the second Apple Watch 2, they say, is going to have things like a FaceTime camera in addition to extra Wi-Fi capabilities. The FaceTime camera, I don't know if that makes sense. They say it's going to be in the bezel of the front of the watch. So it's going to be something where you're actually supposedly going to be doing a FaceTime call.
I'm just not buying this.
Is that something we want? Do we want that?
Well, there are going to be some people with some giant shoulders, but just one of the two shoulders are going to be giant.
I guess we do want, you know, this is like
people want it, but yeah, I mean, the battery life. Are people going to have to recharge their watch like every 4 hours?
Yeah, probably.
Well, that's the other thing that they've mentioned is that the battery life is supposed to remain just about the same.
Well, not if you're doing video calling, though. I mean, the thing is like, are you really going to have a long video conversation, or is this more like quick stuff, or is this just, you know, capture a quick video message for messages?
I think it's probably going to be more like quick video messages and more likely just selfies. It can't see much more than selfies.
Right.
I'm not one to take many selfies, but it seems like it's a selfie camera. If they're going to add that on there, there's not a lot more that I think people are going to be doing.
If it's a significant drain on battery life, though, I can't see
Apple doing that.
Well, they're not going to do it if it's a significant drain. They just,
right.
That's just their style. The one thing that I think would be more interesting is, you know, those Samsung watches, those first couple that they had cameras.
Yeah, I mean, did people use that feature or did they take it away?
I do not know if people used it, but I feel like I would really like to have that, because there are a lot of times where there's just something where I want to capture a photo of something that's happening in front of me and send it to somebody real quick. And I think that if Apple can figure out the experience of making that, you know, watch style fast.
But are you going to flip your watch around and like,
And then just kind of hope that you
hit the digital crown and take a picture and hope that you captured what
No. I'm not saying using the front facing FaceTime camera. I'm saying have another camera on the band, a la Samsung.
No.
Oh, Samsung had one on the band. No.
I think that would be more useful than a FaceTime camera.
Probably. I agree with Michael that it would be more useful. I think the idea of a camera on a watch at all is just dumb.
I'm with you on that.
I think there are probably a lot of listeners who would enjoy it, but maybe I'm alone. I have felt on several occasions that I'm alone. Okay. Well, what's it going to hurt? Is it going to hurt you?
If they're
going to
do that, why not just make like one of these wearable cameras, you know, that people want to have, like recording their life all the time, something that you just clip on somewhere and then it's remotely controlled from the watch.
That would be Bluetooth. More reasonable.
So have the Apple Life Cam.
There you go.
You perch on your shoulder like a parrot.
You clip on your lapel or clip on your pocket, or you know, you could wear a wristband, I suppose, with it clipped onto it, and it's just an extra device that you buy that works with the watch. That way you have the option. It's not something that's tied into your watch, driving the price up for that, you know, that you're not going to use. I don't know. I think that's a dumb idea. I'm just saying this right now because I don't want to get feedback on it. I think even that's a dumb idea, but that seems more reasonable to me than sticking some lame camera on my watch.
Yeah, well, there's the other issue is Apple really enjoys selling those third-party bands that, according to...
Oh, their own bands, you mean?
Yes, yeah, they like to sell those bands. So Slice Intelligence, I think it is. They believe that it costs $2.05 to make the fluoroelastomer $50 band.
Sure.
But
how much do you think it costs to make the leather band? I mean, come on, that's like $20 at the most. Probably less.
It probably is.
Are we talking materials?
They're talking materials.
Yeah.
Right.
So for actual cost, which would be packaging and design and all of that
stuff. Building the thing, putting it together, putting it through the process in the factory, and actually having the factory itself.
Yeah, so that $2 band is maybe $10.
Yeah. I mean, and I don't have the white band, but I have a light blue band, and Doc Rock pointed this out. He has the white band on his Apple Watch. He said it is not dirty.
That's nice.
And my blue band has not gotten dirty either. And it's not like I'm, you know.
I hadn't noticed that. My black band isn't dirty.
Huh. Be a little harder to tell on your black band. But, you know, it'll get little smudges on it and stuff like that. But they just wipe off. I mean,
yeah. Yep.
It's not.
I mean, if my band was getting dirty, I would be able to see it or feel it. But no.
And I wear it every day. So there is some weird technology. I mean, there's some R&D that went into this thing. It's not just...
It's not just another plastic band.
Correct. It's not the same as other plastic bands that I had. He said his didn't smell, but I'm not going to smell mine.
Yeah. Smelling
you. Not going there.
So you're just like sitting there in your cubicle.
Just sniffing
your band. You look left, you look right, and then you put your nose down and you smell it. And then you realize a coworker.
And then you look up and there's the girl looking at, and she's like,
why are you smelling your wrist?
Sometimes I take my Apple Watch and I smell the band. That's bad.
That's yeah. Okay. That's a reference.
Yeah.
I get that one. Where else are we? Oh, you can buy an Apple Watch in the store now. You can go to the Apple Store, your local friendly Apple Store.
I know somebody who bought one at the Apple Store.
Yes. Didn't David Sparks do that?
Oh, I don't know about David Sparks. Chuck Latornis did.
Nice.
Yeah, he walked right in day one, and he was funny because he was like, I was the very first person at the store to buy an Apple Watch from the store.
Did they give him a high five?
I think so.
Sweet.
And a watch.
Nice. I joked with him. I said, the employees probably didn't even know they had them. They're like,
oh, we don't
what?
Have them. Wait, hang on. What? We have one?
They're here? No, the employees. Apple's so secretive about that. And that's earlier than expected, right? Because hadn't we been hearing rumors that it was supposed to be like on the 20...
Yeah, it was supposed to be...
6th or something. Or was that even 20... the keynote?
This was later that Apple announced this. Yeah, it was supposed to be like next Friday, the 26th.
That's what I thought. I mean,
that coincided with with some of the other international releases. So they did it more than a week early.
Yeah, that's cool. So I imagine not all the models are available in store, but there is a tool to check online. So you go and you find the watch you want, and then you hit the little check availability in store button, and it'll let you know.
That's pretty nice. Cool.
And I guess you can reserve it, and you just pop on down to the store and pick up your new watch. So
that's awesome. So for those of you that were waiting for instant gratification, now you can have it.
Yeah, that's sweet.
And I totally get the irony in my statement.
Right? They don't have all the models though, right?
Right, yeah. That's why you want to check.
Yeah, the Space Black Apple Watch stainless steel model, not in stores.
Oh. I haven't seen any. I've seen a lot of stainless steel Apple Watches around JPL, actually. So mm-hmm. It seems like that's the popular one for
they're nice
for people
looking.
Who have money.
Like classic buckle.
I think
black
I've seen
leather classic buckle.
I don't know. I've seen a lot of black bands. I feel like they're mostly the fluoroelastomer. I've definitely seen a few fluoroelastomer, but there may be other bands. I'm always scoping up people's wrists now. I feel like I might be a wrist creep at this point.
You may be, but that's okay. We love you anyhow.
Yeah, and it's not because I want to go talk to them about their Apple Watch. It's just because I'm just curious about what people are wearing on their wrist now because I have one.
I totally can't even do it. I mean, I would have loved to have the 42 stainless with the black classic buckle, but the thing is $700.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
That's twice what I paid for mine.
Yeah, and there are going to be better capabilities in the next Apple Watch. So in addition to the camera potential thing, I think more likely we are definitely going to see, again, from 9 to 5 Mac, better Wi-Fi capability that will also allow for more autonomous usage of the watch without your phone. And I guess the current watch doesn't have a chipset that allows for Wi-Fi triangulation.
Huh.
That's kind of what is implied. So it says the new wireless chipset will also enable Find My Watch for tracking lost or stolen or misplaced Apple Watches using a Wi-Fi router triangulation technology as opposed to GPS.
Dude. They have the black sport space gray aluminum in Pasadena right now. Go.
Dude, run, Michael, run.
I already have one. I don't need another
have
one.
Two.
Come on.
They don't have any in San Diego. I was just checking.
Okay, well, come up. We'll go to lunch and get an Apple Watch for yourself.
I already have mine.
Well, you give that one to your wife. She likes it, right?
Yep.
Yeah, there you go. Let's see here. Oh, according to... Is it Slice again? The people who... Yeah, it is Slice. I didn't mention the part about that they sold 2.8 million Apple Watches according to their estimations, which is pretty good.
Okay, sorry. I'm having fun on here. So, in comparison, the sport with the green band in California, every Apple store has one.
Nobody wants the green band.
That's kind of funny.
It's too bad Apple's so... They put so much importance on the whole unboxing experience because they could just assemble them in the back. They could just have a bunch of cases and a bunch of bands and then just say, oh, which one do you want? And then
I have a feeling you're going to run into what I call the iMac dilemma with the watches at some point.
Well, they have experience with that, right?
Well... do you know, like, when Apple did the original gumdrop iMacs and they brought them out in colors, the five different colors? And if you were a reseller, at a certain point, it got so bad because they couldn't move certain colors that resellers, if they wanted to order any kind of volume, it's like you got to take an even distribution of every color.
Oh.
Which sucked for everyone, because now you have these resellers that are like, well, then I'm not going to order Macs, or they get stuck with extras that
they
can't
it was
sell.
Bad. It was bad.
Wow.
So they've had the problem with iPods too, right?
Sure. Yeah.
They've always had this problem where it's like certain colors just don't move.
They're no stranger to that. Yeah. Well, I mean, I think they'll probably figure it out. And Timmy Cook is, he's a master at that sort of stuff. That's his forte, right? Is figuring out
logistics. I sidelined us. Okay. I'm done. I'm not going to do this anymore.
No, it's fine. What else would we do other than sideline? So, Yeah, there's just not that much to talk about unless we.
There's not a lot happening right now. Yeah.
Yeah. True. Yeah. But there is the XARA security stuff that's going on.
Dude, this is a pretty big deal in my opinion.
Yeah.
I know some people are trying to downplay it. I think the risk isn't that high. You should probably tell people what it is.
Well, and I definitely want you to chime in because I've had a tough time wrapping my head around it.
I read the 13-page paper.
Okay, well, why don't we get briefed by Adam on this thing? So what's the deal? What's happening? What is this?
It's sort of, there's like a multi-tier thing going on here, right? So there's a couple different attacks that are being outlined. I think the most concerning was the fact that they figured out a way to kind of slip apps that had this, that could take advantage of this exploit into the app stores.
Oh, interesting.
So they got them by people, because in order for this thing to work, in essence, what can happen is apps can sort of get to the documents area outside of their sandboxing. So, with sandboxing, specifically like on an iOS app, right? If I'm storing documents, I have my little own sort of document area, right?
Yeah.
And I can get into that. I can also sort of request access to, connect with another app. So I think they use like Evernote as one example or things like that. And, once Evernote has sort of been authorized to that Evernote area, it can get in there. The problem, what they discovered is there's a way to sort of request that access and with a third party app and then get granted that. So basically you could put a malicious app in the app store. It could ask, say, hey, I'm Evernote, using the sort of the Evernote...
The URL scheme?
The URL scheme, the little key. And then once it's sort of been authorized, it's like, oh, you're Evernote, so you can have access to the Evernote area.
Yeah.
And you can do this for sort of any app.
Yeah.
So,
or Dropbox. I think Dropbox would be a great example of that. You could masquerade as Dropbox and do all sorts
right.
of things, especially
and
with like
so
one password.
That's one of the things. There's, also the just launching using the URL scheme. There's like no checks. So like, for example, like the Yelp URL, Yelp:// it opens up the Yelp app and then, logs in via Yelp. This is another problem, right? So you can request it and say you're going to log into, Yelp. This app could sort of sit as a man in the middle and respond to the Yelp. You could register the Yelp URL from the malicious app. And, the caveats are you'd have to be installed before Yelp was installed. So the malicious app would have to be installed. Well, actually, it's different depending on whether it's on the Mac or on on iOS. Because I can't remember. One of them, it's the first one to register that URL scheme gets it. And the other one, and I don't remember, I'm sorry, I don't remember which way it was, but the other one does it, whichever the most recent one to request that URL scheme, okay. Right? Does that make sense? So like Yelp registers, hey, we have Yelp:// and anytime you see that URL, open the Yelp app.
Right, yeah. Right? And so the idea in that case would be you're requesting access from Yelp or Dropbox and it
right.
bops you over to the app. And then in that case, It has to look like Yelp.
And the callback comes to the app. So the attack here is if you have the malicious app on your device or on your Mac and Yelp requests, login using your Yelp login, or this could be your Google login or your Dropbox login, the malicious app will respond to that, send the request off to Yelp or Dropbox, and then you get the token back after you log in. Now that malicious app has your token, and even worse is it can pass you back to the original app. So you don't even know that they've captured your login token with the malicious app, because it'll throw you back into the Yelp app, and you're like, oh, I've just logged into Yelp.
Yep.
And I'm back in the Yelp app. But what really initially responded to that URL request was the malicious app. So now it has your key and it could do whatever it wants with that. I'm assuming the worst case scenario would be it's phoning home and sending that off into a database somehow. I don't know if that would be allowed within the OS scheme. But, the deal is why this isn't particularly too bad is you have to have installed an app at some point that has the malicious code in it. But the concern is that because they figured out how to slip this stuff into the app stores, you wouldn't know. And most people just implicitly trust any app that's in the app store to not be doing anything malicious. So that's why I think that the biggest concern area of concern is that. But I think I read just today that Apple's already done some back-end stuff.
Yeah, they have.
Yes, they have.
To try and lock that down. So I don't know if that fully locks that down. It wasn't really clear. But, you know, they are working to address this. But here's the thing. They've known about it for at least 6 months,
if
not longer.
See,
yeah,
I'm thinking
about it.
No, I think they have done some things about it. I think they've tried doing a few things in iOS via updates to address it in certain ways. But yeah, it's clear they haven't figured it out yet.
I think part of the problem is goes to the foundation of the way applications are built and distributed.
Right.
And to completely fix the problem, Apple will, in essence, have to start over.
Yeah, they did ask for an extension. I guess these guys took the issue to Apple. Apple said, we need 6 months. And then I guess the 6 months has lapsed, and then Apple asked for an extension, but these guys just went ahead and published this because they felt maybe 6 months was long enough. I don't know that side of the story. I don't know if you guys have more color on that or not.
No, I don't.
No. But it seems to be even more of an issue on OS X. There are a lot more things that can happen. So it's several different attacks that can be done. Is it cross-app resource acquisition or something like that?
Yeah, that's their term. Yeah. They call this cross-application resource access. Exploit is what they're calling it.
Yeah, so it involves several different techniques, one of which on OS X, I don't think it affects iOS, is pre-registering an entry in the keychain and allowing access to, and I think that only affects Chrome, actually.
Third-party browsers, for browsers, but there's other things like, because there's this thing called a bundle ID. So if you have like a companion app that goes along with your app, and the one that concerns me on this one is 1Password. How you have the 1Password browser extension?
Yep.
A malicious app could go in and register itself as the 1Password browser extension. And then when you go to log in somewhere, it can start capturing that stuff. Because it's going to be responding to those as if it were 1Password.
Man, they need to fix that.
But the Agile guys have been working with the people that discovered this exploit for 6 months. So Agile is doing everything they can to mitigate a potential security threat from their end.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and this is, and just on that side of things, this is unlike, you know, something like the KeePass or the more cloud-based application services that have been sort of compromised recently. You know, where they're actually breaking into cloud servers and stealing data. You know, 1Password, I still like 1Password because even though I choose to sync it with Dropbox syncs, you know, their stuff's kept locally and inside, you know, the operating system. So, and once again, I'll just reiterate, you have to have installed an application on your Mac, though, that has this malicious code in it. So there's the whole dilemma of this code has to get onto your Mac to begin with before the exploit can be taken advantage of. So I don't think a lot of people are really at risk, especially if you make sure you're only, you know, downloading apps from the app store from known developers and things like that. But, you know, oftentimes people, who knows, I don't know all of the, I mean, there's some smaller applications that I've downloaded from some smaller developers and, you know, can I trust them? I don't know. And that's what this brings into question for me now. At least for the time being, I'd be very careful about what apps from any source that you're putting onto your system.
Yeah, and there got to be, I would imagine there are more rigorous tests that the App Store approval people are going through to try and mitigate this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully. I mean, you'd have to know the little URL schemes, but it's, you know, sometimes they're very easy to guess. So there's a lot of things that have to happen. You know, even if somebody is throwing a malicious app in there, they're guessing at some things. They have to know there's some data they need to know that they may not know. There's some orders of things being installed, like I said, and I wish I could remember on the iOS versus Mac how the registration works. But, you know, you have to have installed the malicious app first in many cases, and then the app that, you know, it's taking advantage of. So, yeah. You know, a lot of times the odds of that happening are going to be minimal as well. So, but I mean, I think it's a big deal because, again, the fact that they were able to get malicious apps into the App Store, I think is the biggest problem with this exploit, because that could be the attack vector for how an app gets onto your system to use this exploit.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Okay, so moving on, according to Ming-Chi Kuo, he believes that Apple is going to probably use, again, the 7000 series aluminum in the new iPhone, the same aluminum that they're using in the Apple Watch Sport that is extra strong and extra light, although I believe he says that it will be slightly, the dimensions of the next iPhone are going to be very, very slightly larger because of that and because of the Force Touch going in.
Because of the aluminum, it's going to be larger?
Yeah, so the report claims that the next generation iPhone could be wider and taller by 0.15 millimeters to account for the stronger aluminum design, while the smartphone may be about 0.2 millimeters thicker due to the addition of Force Touch.
So is the speculation that's in response to Bendgate?
I have not seen any speculation to that, but. And in addition to that, I believe they will. He believes that the next iPhone will be more black.
Oh. And, you know, I say the Bendgate thing sort of jokingly, but the reality is I have had known people who have had bent phones. And, you know, it is slightly a thing. I don't think it affects a lot of people, but it can happen. So I think anything they can do to make the structure more rigid is going to be good.
Oh, sure. Yeah. But do you think that they, did they replace those phones?
Yeah, they did. Yeah. Oh, yeah. They were taken care of.
Yeah, so it's not a big deal.
It's just a thing that can happen because, again, it's aluminum. Aluminum bends. This isn't an Apple exclusive thing. Anybody who's making a thin, light aluminum phone is going to have this problem.
Yep.
So I jokingly said it was in response to Bendgate, but I think it really is in response to the fact that they had some issues with some phones bending and they want to address it. They want to use a stronger material that's going to be less susceptible to that happening.
Right. Let's see what else. He also believes that there's a possibility of perhaps seeing a rose gold color option.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think we'll see iPhone edition?
No.
That'll be a lot of gold. That'll be a really expensive phone.
I don't know. I mean, never say never, but I mean, it seems unlikely to me.
Yeah.
What the question I want to ask you guys is, what's your thoughts on Force Touch on an iOS device, like an iPhone or an iPad? I mean, is it going to be?
Depending on how it's implemented UI wise, you know, the Apple Watch, the Force Touch makes a lot of sense because it exposes a whole extra layer of controls,
Have a lot of surface area to have real specific taps or touches. You're not going to be able to have multi-touch, so this sort of gives you a pseudo multi-touch, right?
Right. So right now we've seen that it's useful for MacBooks. I think there will be some uses on the iPhone, and I think it'll probably be a very limited thing.
Like an extra button push, really.
Yeah.
You know, is it going to be really geographically targeted? And you're not going to have geographic, you know, haptic feedback where when I press on this Force Touch on this area of the screen, I'm going to sort of feel it or know it. You know, I know it's localized, but I don't think it'll be used in a localized manner. If that makes
sense. You think Force Touch will be localized on the phone?
I don't know. Will it? You know, like if I Force Touch on a specific icon, only that icon reacts, or is it just going to be certain things?
If I Force Touch
anywhere on the screen, then I get an extra control.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I would imagine Apple can. Well, obviously they can accurately detect where you're tapping now. Whether they will be able to accurately discern both the location of your press and the fact that you're force touching.
I think they can. My question is there any UI benefit on a larger screen to using it in that fashion? And I don't know that there is. I think it's going to be more the thing where you just have an extra almost like gesture and it's force touch and it reveals some other things. I would imagine you could, you know, tie it to where you're pressing on the screen and do some interesting UI things also. I just don't think that'll be part of at least the initial implementation of force touch. I think it's going to be more generalized than that, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see here. Oh, AT&T was fined $100 million by the FCC.
Whoops-a-daisy.
For the whole unlimited data throttling thing. So,
you know, on this story too, I haven't dug into this, and Jeff, I think maybe you have a little bit. Was the allegation really just that they didn't disclose, like they weren't being clear enough, and that's what they got fined for? Or because they didn't get fined for the actual what they did. It was more like you did this and you didn't really tell people.
Yeah. It was what you were doing. It was for being misleading.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's not going to necessarily, you know, anybody who thinks that, AT&T is not going to throttle anymore is probably thinking incorrectly. Because I believe what will happen out of this is you're just going to see them up front saying, you know, more clearly, hey, you'll be throttled past X amount of data usage.
Well, I think that I'm not sure that'll work out, because isn't the idea that they weren't clear up front about the terms of service at the signing of the contract? So they would have to adhere to that more
generally. But they could send emails out to all those customers and say, look, here's the deal. You know, and this is if you say okay or you agree to this, or by, you know, reading this email, if you continue on your contract, you agree to these new terms. So they just have to offer up new terms to the customers that are in those plans.
So they can continue to offer unlimited data, but they can pull a Darth Vader. and change the terms so that you get unlimited data, but after a certain point, it's not as fast.
Yeah. Right. So if you're a current customer and they want to continue this practice, I would imagine, you know, I'm no lawyer or anything, but my guess is that everybody on a grandfathered unlimited data plan gets an email at some point. The email says, here's your new terms. Here's what happens. You have unlimited data. That's fine. You continue at your current rate. That's fine. But no, that the new terms state after a certain amount of data, 2.5, 3 gigs or whatever it is, if you go beyond that, we are going to throttle you down to X speed. And they state that very clearly. And they say, so if you continue in the plan without changing it, you agree to these new terms. Otherwise, you can switch your plan and not be throttled. That's the lawyer way of handling it. It's not great, but yeah. I would imagine something like that happens so that they don't, you know, face another fine. Because if they don't change the terms, they'd still be subject. And so there must be some consequence. And maybe it's not far enough in the process yet beyond the fine. Have they laid out what else AT&T has to do?
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. My guess is there's going to be some letters going out and they're going to renegotiate terms with all of those customers. And again, they'll use it as an opportunity to try and force people off the unlimited plans.
Yeah, yeah.
And they'll twist it in that way.
The other thing is, for those of you wondering who gets that $100 million fee that they're paying, it's not going to be you. It's going to be the FCC. It's going to be the Treasury, I believe.
So this wasn't a class action suit.
Correct. This is an FCC action.
But I would imagine if there's not already a class action suit out there for this, there has to be.
You know what's coming.
I would guess there's already one out there, and this will probably be the thing that they use to win that case. They'll be like, look, the FCC fined them, so obviously we win.
Yeah.
So I would guess at some point there will be money coming to customers, probably.
Yeah, a nice $10 check in the mail.
Exactly.
Sweet.
Well, and you know, if you're like me, every class action lawsuit that you've been involved in, it's not even a check. It's, hey, you get $40 off your bill.
Right.
I guess that's nice. You get $40 off your bill. That's good. Unless you're not with AT&T
yeah,
anymore.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, and then you get a credit for any AT&T products or services.
Oh, lucky you.
Right. So, yeah. The companies will always find a way to make something like this work out as best they can in their favor.
Yeah. Although I did get a check from Apple for the whole... for an iPod thing at one point.
Yeah.
An actual check. I was surprised.
That's nice.
I think it was like $20 or something like that.
I've gotten an actual iPod. Or an actual iPod. I don't know that it was a lawsuit. I think it might have been
a recall.
Was it
the Nano issue?
Yeah,
the Nano battery issue?
Yeah. I got a brand new iPod with a little lightning to 30-pin adapter. It was pretty nice. Yeah. So do we want to mention that there are publishers who are upset about the whole news app thing? So they're sending out emails saying, hey, if you want to opt out, you can, but you're by default, you're opted into Apple.
Yeah, we want to talk about that.
Utilizing your RSS feed for news. So
that's fine.
It's pretty clear that if you're publishing an RSS feed, that's the point of it.
Right. And if Apple wants to aggregate RSS feeds,
that's what it's for. That's why you're publishing it. Now, the one thing that I'm curious about is the ad situation. So there are some publishers that have ads in their RSS feeds. And while Apple has said that they may place ads around your content, I believe they have said that the publishers will not receive compensation for that.
Not the ads that are around the RSS feeds, but I think they also state that they're not going to remove ads or advertising from the source material either.
Okay. Yeah. So they're not in a situation where, like, was it paper or there was one publisher that was allowing was returning the money back to the publishers.
Yeah. The thing that I think I somewhat have a problem with, but I don't know how Apple would otherwise handle this. You know, this is a typical case of, again, the lawyers getting in there, and lawyers are always going to opt for sort of the most beneficial terms for that they can get away with under the law for the company. Right? So the problem here is that they're not sending out emails to like every person who's running an RSS feed. Yeah, but any RSS feed that they choose to pick up for the service, and I don't know how they're deciding that, is automatically, unless they opt out, agreeing to these terms. So it's like the problem is they're in many ways, like if they were going to pick up Maccast RSS feed and I didn't know about this, I would just be automatically agreeing to these terms,
right?
Because I didn't opt out. Which that seems weird and wrong to me. Like, you can make me opt into a contract by not telling me and then me not telling you I want out of the contract? That doesn't make any sense.
That doesn't make sense. And the precedent that could set is actually pretty ugly. Because then you'll see all these other companies that'll be like, okay, this totally worked for Apple. And then they just start... opting you into contracts for stuff that you have no intention or desire to participate in. Like, hey, you didn't opt out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See how that's, I mean, I see that as being an issue. Like if they sent me an email prior and said, okay, if you ignore this email or, you know, some sort of communication, then you're agreeing to opt in, but at least I've been notified. So I don't know. I mean, how did this come out? Did somebody get an email from Apple?
Yeah.
Pointing this out?
Yeah.
So maybe they are. I mean, if they are sending out active emails to when they find an RSS feed, if they're automatically generating emails to that RSS feed owner and letting them know about these terms and then saying, well, if you don't opt out, then we're opting you in, then it's not as egregious. But if my RSS feed, without getting any sort of notification from Apple, can just suddenly show up in there and they go, oh yeah, you agreed to all these terms because you never told us you wanted to opt out. And I'm going, I never even knew about your service.
Yeah, no, they're notifying people that there is an option to opt out.
So, I mean, if they're doing that, as long as they're doing that prior to including the feed, I guess the only dilemma there could be, I don't know how many people, you know, that email ends up in spam and they never see the email. And right. Whose fault is that? I don't know.
Well, I'm sure there's a forum to which you can go and...
Yeah, I don't know. It'd be better if they just provided a way for people to submit their RSS feed and say, we want to opt in, I guess. But, you know, they want to get the most content available. And I'm with you. Sort of like my assumption, and we talked about this on the Mac show a little bit, is that if I throw my RSS feed out there, I'm assuming anybody can sort of pick it up and use it. Like I'm making that right. RSS available.
Yeah.
Which is kind of the point of your RSS feed.
Exactly.
Yeah, we get into a gray area, though. So, like, you know, if your RSS feed, if you want to put a licensing term on your RSS feed, then, and you say, well, it can only be used for non-commercial use, say you apply Creative Commons to it, you know, then does Apple have the right to pick it up or not and use it? Because they're taking your content and putting ads around it and then not compensating you for it. And they're obviously making money from that service. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out. You know, I understand both sides of it, and I don't know what the right answers are.
Yeah, I think we're going to see some push and shove happening here while this all gets sorted out.
I mean, but, you know, like Google, they pick up stuff for Google News, right? They don't compensate anybody for that.
No, they don't.
That's true.
So, I mean, is this really any different than that?
I have a feeling that ultimately there will be judges deciding that.
Nice.
I mean, seriously, you know what I mean? Someone's going to end up filing a lawsuit.
Yeah, nobody complains about Google News. And the thing is, too, all these people that are complaining, I mean, if you're going to suddenly have millions of more potential eyeballs on your blog, are you really going to turn that down? Because, you know, ultimately getting the content out there, getting it read and seen is probably going to drive more traffic to the source material at some point. And then your ads and your revenue streams are going to go up just by the sheer factor of having more people.
That's the hope. Hopefully. Otherwise, there's not a lot of benefit.
Well, then you opt out, right?
Yeah, then you opt out.
I mean, this sort of, do we have in the notes this the music thing? This is similar to the music thing, in my opinion.
No.
You know what I'm talking about? The Apple Music thing, the indies getting all
irate. Indies don't want to sign up.
Yeah, I deleted that from what we were going to talk about just because
But it's the same dilemma, right? Because it's like the indies are going, well, you're not going to pay me for the 3 free months of streaming, but... You know, you're getting millions of potential people finding out and discovering your music. Yes, you're not going to get paid for the first 3 months that they're doing that. But for everybody else that stays on, it's a potential huge new income stream.
Yeah, it's not like they're stealing from you. It's not like they're stealing those 3 months. It's extra exposure. It's free exposure.
I'm sure that's part of how Apple is spinning it.
Well,
but
you got to spin it one way.
It sounds like a lot of indie labels aren't buying it.
Well,
you know, because they're looking at it from the side like, well, you're getting my content for that 3 months to promote your Apple Music business. And, you know, because I am me and I have fans and my fans want to use Apple Music, they're gonna go in there and, you know, be listening to that stuff, and now I don't get compensated for it. And you got the marketing benefit of driving, you know, some of my audience off of my brand into your music service.
I am a bit surprised Apple didn't decide to subsidize that, though.
Well, I mean, that's
in a manner of speaking, they are, because they're paying higher royalties.
Yeah, and here's the thing. You know, do those people have music on Spotify? And I don't know how the terms are, but I think under Spotify, if people are only using the free Spotify services, I don't think the compensation's the same. And here's the deal with Apple Music. There is no free tier other than that 3 free month trial.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, those ads cannot possibly generate that much money. It's like cents on the dollar going to the label.
It's not as much revenue. So you potentially have more revenue coming from those people that continue on with the Apple Music service. And the more music that's in there, the more likelihood that people are going to continue the service and pay for it. So, you know, I think if you're really looking at it objectively, then you're going the longer term benefit of giving that 3 months of access away is, you know, there's much more upside than there is downside, I think. And I think that's Apple's argument. But, you know, I understand when you're an indie guy and you're not with a big label, it's kind of tough because every penny that comes in is important to you. Yeah, every revenue stream is critical to you. So if you can get money from Apple, why not try to go for it?
Yeah.
I think the where it really got weird was the allegations that in talks, and if Apple was doing this, you know, they've denied it, but if it happened, that is a very big problem where they said, well, if you don't sign the Apple Music deal, we're going to pull your music from iTunes. If that was said to an artist, then that is wrong. Because the two things are separate.
Agreed.
That is bullying. Apple has denied it. They said they didn't do that. But I think it's unclear at this point. You know, and behind closed doors, when you're in a meeting with certain people, you know, sometimes things get said wrongly or not, you know. So I think maybe there might be some truth to that, and maybe somebody said something in a meeting that they probably shouldn't have. You know, it's not Apple's official hard line, but, you know, things happen.
Yep. Right. Or they could have said it by not actually saying it.
Yep. Or it's misinterpreted. I mean, right. There's lots of things that could have happened. You know, and we'll never know. All we can go off of is the official statement Apple made to Billboard magazine, which was, we are not pulling indie music if they don't sign the Apple Music deal. So,
yep. Okay. Let's do our iDevice picks. You want to go first, Adam?
Yeah. Now I got to remember what mine was. I was just on Appler.
Jeff, do you know? Do you have your pick?
I have my pick.
All right, hit it.
So I'll cover for you, Adam. You've got some
Thanks.
Time now. All right. I'm going with something I believe I've picked in the past, but it was updated just this last week, and it's Dark Sky. And I love the new interface that they have. I think it's a much better use of the space on your screen. And I love that they added in more custom alerts. So I can now have Dark Sky giving me alerts for UV levels.
Oh, cool.
And cool.
Yes. So there are other alerts that you can get also. And then you can also enable, this is a totally opt-in thing. And what you do is you can opt in to sending pressure data from your iPhone. It's not like constantly, but just periodically. Dark Sky will check your current location and what the air pressure is based on the data if you have an iPhone that can do that, which your iPhone is collecting. And then this is helping them get more accurate data for specific locations.
Cool.
So yeah. So anyhow, it's very cool.
It's $4, and yeah, check it out. I gotta check it out too.
Yeah. So I added an alert for 7 a.m. to let me know if the UV index for the day is going to be better than or greater than 9, and then I set up a new snowfall alert, which unfortunately I'm not going to get to use for a few months now.
Is that so unfortunate?
For me, yeah.
It is for me. It is for us, Michael.
Yeah, I guess we get your water, so.
Yeah. So
we're a little short this year.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. So anyhow, you can set up special alerts for wind speed, humidity, temperature.
Pollen?
Pollen isn't in this, but I use hooks for that.
Okay.
And then I set it up so that that I have a do not disturb window, 11 p.m. to 7 a.m.
Nice.
Yeah, so I'm very pleased with the new version of Dark Sky.
Sounds good.
I got to tweak mine out a little bit more. You're using it way better than I am.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Okay,
hopefully,
cool.
Hopefully Carrot Weather will get some of those by proxy.
Oh, yeah, because they use the Dark Sky service.
Yep.
That would be cool.
Nice. All right, Adam, what's your pick?
I found mine. It's a really cool one, actually. So it's TinkerPlay by Autodesk. And what this is it's a 3D modeling application, but what it gives you is a bunch of pre-designed little parts to build characters and creatures. So like action figures and creatures, and they kind of like click and lock together, and you can mix and match to your heart's desire and rotate them around and things like that. But the coolest part of it is once you've designed your sort of action figure, character, creature, whatever it is, there is a button that you can press, and it will lay it out. First you tell it, you can 3D print it, basically, is what I'm getting at. You can send it to a 3D printer. And they have a bunch of 3D printers in there, including, I think the Autodesk supports the new Dremel one that you can get at Home Depot. But if you have access to a 3D printer, you can tell it what 3D printer you have and then press a button, and then it will lay out all the pieces onto whatever your platen size is so that you can then 3D print out all the pieces and then have the actual action figure that you can put back together, and assemble. And for people who don't have a 3D printer, and this is where I'm going to try this, is a lot of public libraries are starting to get 3D printing labs, and the library here in San Diego actually has one. So you can go down and for free print out 3D prints from the public library. So I think they have a couple MakerBot 2s down there, I believe.
Cool.
At the San Diego Library. So I'm going to use this app to test it out.
Nice.
But it's cool. You can make your own action figures. So you get to design and style and make your own action figures.
That's really cool.
You can 3D print. Yeah, and it's free.
All right.
It's even just fun to play around with it. So you can do the models and apply textures and backgrounds and stuff like that. And you can just make 3D characters in scenes and stuff like that if you just want to use it that way.
All right.
So even if you don't 3D print it, it's still a lot of fun for kids and stuff like that. Check it out. TinkerPlay from Autodesk.
Cool. So my pick, it's not an iOS pick, and that's just because I haven't found anything cool this week because I've been busy with stuff. But I watched Jurassic World, and I recommend it. And so that is my
pick. I enjoy Jurassic World also.
Good. I'm glad you enjoyed it as well.
Have you seen the theory about the Chris Pratt character?
What's that?
That it's the kid grown up, from the original Jurassic Park movie.
Tim? Yeah, Timmy.
The little kid where he, talks to him about the Velociraptor.
Yeah. Oh, that guy.
Yeah.
The guy at the beginning.
More like big turkeys to me.
Yeah,
that kid.
That kid. Well, it's not the same actor for sure.
No. But the theory is that I guess there's a line about respecting the dinosaurs that he delivers that's almost word for word the same line that the doctor's character
delivers
to, so show a little respect or something like that, I think he says.
Yeah,
and I think Chris Pratt delivers a similar line.
There's a lot of nods to the original movie.
Yeah, totally. There's a lot of that. So I might have even dismissed that as just simply that. And perhaps
it showed
that's
up on Reddit as a theory based on the timeline and the timing.
Were you on the Jurassic Park subreddit?
Yeah.
You were.
I wasn't on there.
You heard about it.
Linked to it. I saw an article and they linked to it, and that was the source
for it. You're not going to cop to reading the Jurassic Park subreddit. It's okay. I do it too.
No, I totally would read it I have never quite figured out the whole Reddit thing, to be honest.
It's because you're old. You're too old, yeah.
I don't understand. I go on there. I try. I really try. And I feel like part of my nerd card should be taken away because I don't understand subreddits.
I'll take you through Reddit one of these days.
Be very careful.
Yeah, be careful. There's a lot of stuff.
In my day, it was called NNTP.
Yeah, whatever that is.
It's newsreader.
Okay.
The old school.
I thought you had to go at 12:30. What's the deal?
I do.
You keep talking about Reddit. We need to get out of here.
No, I'm talking about NNTP.
I don't know what that is. I'm too young.
Get off my lawn.
All right.
Network News Transfer Protocol, Michael. Network News Transfer Protocol. Look it up on Wikipedia.
I'll look it up in my encyclopedia.
It was our Reddit
Okay, I believe you, old man. Of course, this episode is sponsored by Lynda, lynda.com/TIOSS. Check them out. Free 10-day trial. The iPhone picks and the show notes are all at theiosshow.com. You can review the show in iTunes and tell a friend. That always helps. Feedback at theiosshow.com is the email address to which you can send your feedback. And advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. Jeff Gamet is at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com. The TMO Daily Observations podcast, which is still daily.
Still.
Good job.
Yes, it is.
Good job.
And why thanks.
You should check it out because it's really cool.
Why thanks. And it's a lot of fun to do.
Yeah. It's fun to have you.
Just like this show.
Yeah. And Adam Christensen, he's at the MattCast, mattcast.com, at MattCast on Twitter. And I don't know. You're probably going to be at Disney sometime where someone could spot you.
I don't know. My next thing's Colorado and then Nerdtacular.
Oh, yeah.
At the end of July.
Spot them at Nerdtacular. There you go.
You should go to Nerdtacular. Everybody should go to Nerdtacular. I don't think you can get tickets now. I think it's probably sold out.
You can get me in. I know a guy.
Yeah, maybe. That's cool. Also, check out the Mac show on the British Tech Network. I'm a regular guest on Fridays, and we do that live. So if you're around, it's early for me Friday morning at 7 a.m.
7 a.m. Nice.
Yeah, if you're in the U.S., but over in the U.K., obviously, I think it's like 5 or 6 p.m. I can't remember. I can never do the math.
It's a normal time for them. That's why they do it at an ungodly time for us, not because
Poor Doc Rock has to show up at like 4 a.m. because he's in Hawaii, so...
That's pretty hardcore.
Wow.
He's hardcore.
All right.
All right.
I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter, and you can find me on Appler, GETAPPLR.com/Michael. And with that, we'll see you next time on the iOS show.
An iPod. An iPod.
Internet.
How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No.
Yuck. Yuck, yuck,
no. Who wants a stylus?
Stylus.
We have to get them and put them away.